Welcome to a special bank holiday edition of Hertfordshire Stories, the programme in which a Hertfordshire resident tells us their story and chooses six pieces of music that mean something special to them. My name is Ian Pritchard, and my guest this time is an events organiser, local businessman, sometime restaurateur, and famous, of course, for Oktoberfest, who are one of our advertising partners here on Mix 92.6. It's Andrew Dempsey. Welcome to Hertfordshire Stories.
Amazing. Thank you very much for having me.
Lovely. Well, let's start first of all by finding out if you've always been a Hertfordshire resident. Did you move here? How did you get started in Hertfordshire?
Yeah, always been a Hertfordshire resident. Grew up in St Albans. Family come from Harpenden, so granddad and my mum and stuff like that all come from Harpenden. We stayed in St Albans. I then went to university in Northampton, so not too far away. Always found myself back in Hertfordshire. We moved to Hatfield shortly after. And then once I come back from university, I moved back into my first ever house I ever lived in, which was with my granddad. So when I was like 6 months old, that was where we were. I come back from university. I moved back in there. It felt like I just restarted again and I was at home, trying to find where I could fit in, finding what kind of jobs that, like, you know, coming fresh out of university, the naivety of thinking that you can take on the world. Lived there for a short period of time, was working in London, managed to get some London jobs of just, you know, slaving away is probably a bit of a harsher term, but, you know, just trying to find my way in a bit more of a professional environment. Coming all the way up to always wanted to start my own business. So me and my best friend at school, we went to Nicholas Breakspear. We always wanted to start our own business together. We all, you know, were talking about all crazy ideas that were way against our budget and our capabilities at 16 and 17. But I think the dreaming was also good enough. When I come back from university, that was when we came together and I said, look, the dreams are enough. Let's start making a business together. We made our first business together called Bar Crafters. Actually, it was called 99 Events back then, and we were just like a private bar hire company that we were just two guys that knew how to make cocktails, and we were just asking you to invite us around your house.
Did that work? Was that successful?
It was successful. Yeah, we were taking on, like, we would do anything to try and get a role, like to get a job going. You know, when trying to get your first customers, you know, we were doing jobs for free at one point. We were paying for jobs at one point, you know, where we're paying for the booze and we're like, let's just turn up, let's show what we can do. And I didn't even know what we could do back then, but we thought we were the nuts, so we thought, you know, we must have something here.
Fantastic. So entrepreneur from the very beginning there, Andrew, I think. Catch our breath quickly here and find out what your first music choice is going to be and how we get to that.
Yes, so first one is Wish You Were Here, Pink Floyd. This is a note to my granddad. So he was the guy that obviously took me in when I come back from university. You know, wasn't no worry about rent or any kind of costs or anything like that. Was always helping me with money. We're really close as well. You know, he comes to my events now still to this day. I bought a drone a few months ago, you know, spent like that £800 on a drone. The next day he bought one as well, because he was like, if you've got one, I need one. You know, he does marvelously for a guy who's 64 now. He's a very young granddad for me, and he can do absolutely anything that I can do and a little bit more. Always giving me advice. First bit of advice he ever gave me was listen to Pink Floyd. And
good advice to anybody, I reckon.
I think so, yeah. And so he put me onto Pink Floyd in return. I've always tried to buy him T-shirts and memorabilia and stuff like that to pay him back, to say, bloody hell, you gave me like some of the best albums I still listen to this day.
Fantastic. So what are we going to listen to first?
So we'll be listening to Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd.
Lovely. Well, let's listen to that right now. Pink Floyd and Wish You Were Here. So we're back with Andrew Dempsey, and we're listening to his Hertfordshire story. And Andrew, we were hearing there about the relationship you have with your granddad and the way he introduced you to Pink Floyd and presumably lots of other things as well. So he was a key influence in your life always.
Yeah, 100%. I think he grew up, he had five daughters, never had a son. Was always shooting his shot at trying to get a son, and I was the first grandson in the family, so I think that was the tie between us. to know that, you know, even though he never managed to get a son, he managed to get a son in another way. So we've always been really close. Some of my earliest memories of being with him as well. So yeah, definitely. I think I can't pay homage to him, definitely.
Wonderful. And so did he also encourage you in terms of setting up a business and so on, or was his focus really just on music?
Don't get me wrong, he's the best at pointing a negative in anything. I can show him the most positive things in the world. You go, have you thought of this? And I'm like, thank you very much. Maybe I haven't thought about it, but sometimes I just want to tell you all the good stuff. So he's very good in stuff like that. He texted me the other day. I said to him, we've got 5 locations this year. And he said, oh, you're going to have to organize that. And I was like, I think we will have to organize that. I think that will be a big one to organize. So yeah, he loves giving his opinion, whether it's asked for or not. he's the best for stuff like that. He's always got an interest in what we're doing. He's not there to listen to garbage at the end of the day. He likes to hear real progression in the family.
Fantastic. Well, we were talking there about how you had started a little business there. So that was just setting up and providing drinks for people. So say a little bit more about that and how you moved on from there.
Yeah, so we were just literally doing small gigs. We then managed to get like a few like B-list celebrities kind of coming into our way at some point. I think we had like a friend of a friend that recommended and they wanted to do a private party. We was doing things for like Rochelle Humes and Marvin Humes. So they were like in the set. We were doing things for them like probably a few times in the year as well. We'd always come back and do things for them as well. They were always a great laugh. They connected us with, I think, Tom Cleverley. We did a private party for him, X-Men player. We did Dr. Raj, I think was his name. I think he's a celebrity doctor that goes on.
Yeah. People know him.
In Coca-Cola. So like, you know, we did parties for him. I think we did one for Gareth Thomas, I think his name was. He was an ex Blue Peter presenter as well. He gave me a Blue Peter badge. There's a Blue Peter badge somewhere in my room. Because I made him so many good cocktails, he gave me a Blue Peter badge. I don't even think I'm supposed to tell people that one, but I've got a Blue Peter badge, and that was.
I think there's no shame in having a Blue Peter badge. Actually, there's probably quite a few of them around, but it's still a pretty select club, I think.
People are proud of it. I think I showed my mum. Yeah, totally. She's super jealous. You know, there's some of this stuff.
Yeah, generations have grown up with Blue Peter and lusted after those Blue Peter badges. Members haven't got them.
I've got one. I've got one here somewhere. But yeah, so after that, obviously we started feeling about what, you know, what we're good at and more importantly, what we're not good at.
But you were good at mixology, good at
cocktails. Yeah, so a little bit of background. Whilst I was obviously trying to find my way in a bit more professional environment, I was always working in bars, in cocktail bars as well. I was working in late night bars as well, you know, finishing at 4 or 5 in the morning. So I used to do private masterclasses as well for 20, 30 people at a time. And that was a weekly occurrence for me. So I was very good at like entertaining and very good at kind of being a bit of a joker, a little bit laugh at me, laugh with me kind of person. We were, you know, making loads of cocktails, good laughs, playing games, and more importantly, just having a good like celebration with everyone.
Fantastic.
That was great fun. We then moved on to, we were actually going to, you know, scale that business, and then COVID come around. So, you know, that whole idea of entertaining people and inviting randomers into your house, that was all of a sudden turned into the worst idea in the world in that period. So we parked that bus up a little bit. And we went back to the drawing board. And that's when I would say that my first real business was launched after that, where it was real responsibility and accountability for that. We started up a restaurant shortly after that. So I opened up a ghost kitchen in Hatfield during COVID times, because obviously all people could do was eat. So me and my best friend, who I live with now, we came together, and a few other friends that are from the Hatfield community. We came together and we made Eli's, which is a fried chicken joint that was a lot similar to Five Guys in the way of gourmet burgers, unlimited toppings, delivered to your door. That went so well that we actually had a meeting with Landsec, who owned the Galleria in Hatfield. They gave us a unit in the Galleria, and we had a restaurant just opposite McDonald's and next to Burger King for about 18 months. So yeah, that was when things started rolling. I started realizing some of these things that we were messing about with the cocktail stuff. I actually learned some things. I went to university and studied business entrepreneurship as well for 3 years. So I have a little bit of a basic background in finance and accounting and marketing and stuff like that. So that really started coming to fruition there and was really helpful. And that's when I started realizing actually we might have something here. You know, we had 10 employees. We were doing pop-ups at Amazon's head office, Goldman Sachs, UBS.
Wow. Yeah, wow, Andrew, this sounds like, you know, the sort of dream scenario that would appear on Dragon's Den, and they'd all be falling all over themselves to get to you, I imagine. I could see, you know, Peter James and Deborah Meaden just kind of fighting each other to put in the lowest possible offer.
Yeah, 100%, definitely. And I think I was in that position where, you know, we started having investment come to us, offering us investment, you know, asking for equity. And by then, I think that was when I started realizing it wasn't a little chicken joint that me and my friends had something quite serious here. That actually moves me on to my next song, because this next song for me is reminds me of my best friend. I can catch him sometimes when he's like sitting in the living room and he's got headphones on and he's just listening to like some of the best guitar solos that have ever been done in the world. And one of the best guitar solos is by Prince. He did My Guitar Gently Weeps. It was the Rolling Stones, as they let in George Harrison into the Rolling Stones Hall of Fame. And they had a celebration with his son that was there, George Harrison's son, and Prince. Prince quite safely melted into the guitar and did one of the best guitar solos ever. You're not able to find that song anymore, but what you can to remind yourself of how great that guitar solo was to listen to George Harrison's My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Let's listen to that right now. And that was While My Guitar Gently Weeps with George Harrison there. And that was Andrew Dempsey's second choice here on Hertfordshire Stories. So, Andrew, tell us what happens next. So you've moved on from mixology, you've moved on from cocktails, you've had a restaurant startup, and you've got people climbing over themselves to get some equity in the business. So what happens next? You must be feeling weird, I would think, aren't you? I mean, suddenly, you know, catapulting into this kind of successful entrepreneurship. How did that feel?
Yeah, it felt very strange. I think, like I said, we were doing all these things for fun first and money follows. The money never followed, if I'm honest. It was just a lot of fun. I think when we first did our cocktail stuff, it was a lot of fun. We go into the Eli's when we was doing the fried chicken. It was getting a lot more fun. There was a lot more cash coming in. There was a lot more revenue. In terms of profits, I'm not too sure if there were many. Otherwise, I'd still be doing the restaurant now. But I think what I was doing was I was like earning my stripes, putting my feathers in my cap during all that moment. Mm. So after we'd launched the restaurant in the Galleria, we were there for just over a year. So we were there for just over a year in the Galleria. So after that tenancy ended, we had a look at, you know, what we'd learned.
So what had you learned there, Andrew? Just kind of any big lessons that had come out of that particular period that paved the way forward?
What I did notice was COVID was such a strange time that it didn't only harm certain businesses, but it made certain businesses flourish during that time. But what that did do was once COVID did go, it did have a vice versa effect. So, you know, those companies that were hindered at the beginning stage were starting to flourish at the end, but also the companies that flourished during that period, they were the ones that were really affected once we come out of COVID. So
affected in a bad way. You mean they kind of didn't have the market anymore?
Exactly. So, you know, we're now in a position where we're a takeaway only. COVID is lifted. People want to go out. People want to go on holidays. People want to eat out and experience that and be with friends, walk in the park. And none of that really involves sitting at home and eating a burger anymore. And, you know, sitting at home was the last thing that people wanted to do. So that's when we realized that, you know, we created a great business during COVID and it is a COVID focused business. So after that, we'd come to an agreement that we were going to cut all ties, leave with our heads high and know that that was a great two and a bit year stint. So, we closed the business up. And during that time, that was when we did our first ever Oktoberfest as well. So,
okay.
I had a very quick transition in terms of I was signing papers to close one business down and I was signing papers to get another one started. So
let's talk about Oktoberfest in a little bit more detail. But that's quite a jump from the sort of pop-up restaurant and the deliveries and so on that you've been doing up until now. So I'm wondering how you made that transition and what kind of made you realize that that was the next thing to do.
It's the people around you, I think. So like I'm coming out with these things saying these were my ideas, but like even all three ideas that we're naming now, they were never coming from me originally. You know, the chicken thing was from a best friend of mine, the cocktail business was from another best friend of mine, and then the Oktoberfest was from that same best friend that come up with the cocktail idea. I think I've always just been the one to just go, look, let's do something different. Let's do something original, you know. I'm always there to put in the effort. I'm not there to try and chase where money is. I think we need to be finding what we enjoy. It's a very key, like Alan Watts quote that he says, you know, find what you enjoy and do that and forget the money. Because money follows, you know, you find what you do and you become really good at it, you become a master of it. And then that's when, you know, all these other things that you might worry about in the back of your head, that all starts coming to you naturally. So that was very much my thought process. You know, you give me something I enjoy, I'll jump into it. I don't care what the outcome is. We, my best friend Tom, so as I'd come out of Eli's stuff, he was all very close in that as well. So he was watching that all go along. He was always there on the days as well when we needed him. And this was when he reminded me back when we were 16 and he said, do you remember when I said Hertfordshire needs an Oktoberfest? Well, I've not really let go of that. And so this was probably about 8 years later and he's still holding on to that idea. And, you know, we were in a period where events were just about to be restarted in COVID. So it was a very, very key time. If you was ever to do it, that was the moment to get it done. So as soon as COVID was lifted, we put tickets on sale 8 weeks before October. We put about 4,000 tickets on sale. All 4,000 tickets were sold out over the 8 week period because people were just crying out for something to do. Luckily, Tom has a really good production background. You know, he works on TV sets, so he works with like ITV studios. So he's got a very good understanding of how setting up a production and definitely going on to location and setting up an event of this scale. And then with me, you know, the feathers I've started to earn with, you know, starting up the restaurant and the stuff that we've done before as well. We come together and we had a third business partner as well. He's a very good friend of ours as well. Also a St. Albans lad himself. And all three of us, we just said, hey, let's just give it a go. So we launched the Hertfordshire Oktoberfest together. It was a resounding success. You know, we'd become a household name overnight. You know, people heard about us from near and far. And that was that. That was Hertfordshire Oktoberfest. That
fantastic. Well, it is pretty much a household name. And we're talking in a minute about what sorts of experiences people have been having at the Oktoberfest since it got launched. But for people that have been living in a cave, possibly, who haven't heard about Oktoberfest, just quickly tell us what that actually is.
A big marquee, a big top marquee with unlimited beer on tap, with great umper bands, dressing up in lederhosen and dirndls, using some of the best local suppliers that you can find in Hertfordshire and creating what we call the Hertfordshire take on an Oktoberfest. So working with local beer brands, working with local production teams, local staffing, local art teams, for example. And yeah, this all coming together and creating what we thought was the ultimate beer tent that really represents Hertfordshire.
Yeah, completely. So let's dive into that in a bit more detail in a minute. But how do we get to your third music choice, Andrew?
So my third music choice is by a great band. They're a lot more local. They're a St. Albans band called Rolo Vango. People can find them on Spotify and Apple Music and whatnot. They're an amazing band. I actually went to school with one of the girls that are in this band today. They also actually work at Oktoberfest and help.
Okay.
So there's this very close tie there as well. We go to see them live as much as we can as well. They have a great song called 352. And yeah, that's my song choice.
Excellent. Well, let's listen to that right away. This is Rolo Vango and 352. And that was Rolo Vango with 352, local band, and Andrew Dempsey's third music choice here on Hertfordshire Stories. So, Andrew, we've got as far as Oktoberfest is an idea, and it's a big tent, and it's lots of beer, men in lederhosen, women in dirndls, and a good time being had by all. So how did that idea then take shape? Because you were drawing on previous experience and all the success you'd had with restaurant pop-ups and the mixology and everything. But how did that all happen and come together in the end?
Collaboration. I think none of the things that we've spoken about couldn't be done without the team that we had. And I think you would have probably noticed that a lot of these people are close friends of mine first.
Yeah.
A lot of people say don't go into business with your best friends. I'd say half of that's true, definitely.
so just go to business with friends, but not your best friends. Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, potentially, yeah. I think there is definitely an advantage with going into business with some best friends, because some people say that you don't go into business with your best friends because you can't be honest, but I don't think you can really consider them friends if you can't be honest about that. We've always had the honesty first thing with my friends groups, and I can't say that I was in a position that I am in today without the people around me. That being said, that is exactly how Hertfordshire Oktoberfest got to how it is now, is the people that are behind the scenes. So, you know, my business partners, Tom and Kate, they are the engine that keeps that running alongside with me. They are the epitome of trying to grow something that was, you know, that idea, when you get that stroke of inspiration and then knowing to go, well, that's a great idea, let's scale that up. I think that's what they do best. I think when we come out of Hertfordshire Oktoberfest in our first year, you know, we come into the second year and we said, let's do two weekends. Went into the third year, we said, let's do two locations. We actually said, let's do three locations. We then went into our fourth year, which is this year. We're now doing five locations.
So I can remember the Hertfordshire one. And that was quite, that was a big tent. That was a big tent. And there really were lederhosen and dirndls going on there. And middle-aged men staggering out with foaming steins of beer. I didn't actually dare to go in the tent myself, but it looked like the people that were in there were having a very good time. So Harpenden was the first one, and then you branched out and did different locations after that, yeah?
Yeah, that's correct. So we last year we did St Albans at the Hertfordshire Showground. We did Harpenden as well, and then we did our first ever Buckinghamshire Oktoberfest as well.
Okay.
That's what we are trying to strive to do now, is to branch out further in Hertfordshire. I think we've managed to master one county, and there are so many areas out there in the world, in the UK. So I think
going to step over the line and risk it in Buckinghamshire. Is that what you're saying here?
Yeah, of course. So I think that's where, you know, our comfort and our safety blanket is Hertfordshire. I think how we grow is we leave that safety blanket for a short period of time. So we've got our two Hertfordshire locations this year as well. But we have also got the first ever Cheltenham Oktoberfest. So we just signed a deal with the Cheltenham Racecourse. So we're doing our first ever Oktoberfest there. I just come back from Bath last week. We've just got an agreement as well that we are doing the Bath Oktoberfest as well. And we are also in talks with doing a fifth location, which I will be able to disclose once we have an auction.
Wonderful, wonderful. Okay, well, gosh, your granddad's going to be very pleased with you, I imagine.
Yeah, I think so. He's got some travelling to do this year, definitely. Yeah,
absolutely. He's got to get around all of them. Does he go to them?
Yeah, he goes to them every year. He drags his friends along, drags his family along. Yeah, 100%. As long as he gets a few free beer tokens, he'll be there.
Absolutely. Well, who wouldn't? Okay, so how do we get to your fourth music choice there, Andrew?
Fourth music choice is another local act. This is actually a girlfriend to one of my other business partners who I did the restaurant with. Who is another best friend of mine, who went to school with, go on holidays with a lot. His girlfriend is an amazing singer. So she was also in the previous song, 352. She has a very small snippet. This is her solo album. This is my favorite song from her solo album. It's called I Fear Nobody by Luna May.
Wonderful. Okay, so let's hear that now. Luna May, I Fear Nobody. And that was I Fear Nobody by Luna May, and it was Andrew Dempsey's fourth music choice on Hertfordshire Stories. Andrew, one of the organisers of Oktoberfest in Hertfordshire, and now spreading out to different counties. So, Andrew, tell us some more about how things are going now and aspirations for the future, maybe.
Yeah, so things are going really well now. Like I said before, we're moving on to five locations this year. We're taking on some more full-time staff as well. I think hopefully in the next coming years, we'll be finding our first ever permanent office spot as well. You know, being event organizers, we're trying to find what more events we can be doing outside of the Oktoberfest period. We're also looking at new businesses. You know, I'm not going to stay shackled to the event industry. I think what I will be always searching out for is the new opportunities, and likewise with my business partners, they're the best at that. So yeah, very successful, I think, in terms of what has become a very blasé idea when we were 16 to becoming a very fully established business where we are today. I think what we will be continuously doing is trying to find more locations, more fest period places. We also want to try and do something abroad as well. I think we'd love to, we've spoken about doing a festival in Ireland before. We've also spoken about working more in Europe, across France, Germany and the Netherlands as well. That's some things that we've spoken about before. So right now we're in a very lucky position because we've got something that needs nurturing, and that's something that is in a slow progression. But now that gives, we've always had the minds of, you know, what's the next new thing? What's the next thing that can keep us going as well, in terms of, you know, motivation and enthusiasm. So I don't know what will be next, but I do know we have some early ideas in the pipeline. And Ian, I hope that some of these ideas come into fruition and we can talk about them and you go, wow, do you remember you spoke about restaurants one day? Now look. I go, oh.
Exactly. Well, just sticking with the present moment then for a bit longer, and we'll get to your fifth track in a minute. As well as yourself and the two business partners you got at the heart of Oktoberfest, it must involve more people now. There must be quite a few people that are actually involved in setting these events going for you, because it's a bigger deal, isn't it, than doing a bit of takeaway food from the gallery in Hatfield, where you were beginning some of that work from. But now it's not just Harpenden or St Albans, it's a number of different locations and even out into different counties. So how big is the team that actually has to get together to make an Oktoberfest happen?
So during Oktoberfest period, we have something close to 40 people that are under our remit at one time. We have up to about 100 people on the event day itself, so including security and production, you know, people that we've brought in. So it'll be near 100 hands or 200 hands in that instance that are helped with the Oktoberfest setup. We always have been on the lookout for people that are like-minded like us, you know. I've been stressing throughout this whole talk is find what you love and money follows. So we're finding people that are in the events industry, do work with festivals, love that, and, you know, have become a master of that, and subsequently their benefits have followed that. So we are working with a great team now who actually set up their own smaller festival on their own grounds in Glastonbury.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're called the Gooden Brothers. It's incredible because they're all the exact same capabilities. And, you know, when you find someone really good and you go, can I just copy and paste you? Well, we found you know, three great Gooden brothers who can all do the, you know, some of the intrinsic and complicated setups for a festival, and knowing the answers to be able to get it done in a timely manner. They've worked, I think they've gone to Glastonbury every year since they was able to. They've always worked on festivals. They've worked in Amsterdam. They did the Spring Break festival as well. And they do their Gooden Time festival as well. So the Gooden Brothers doing the Gooden Time festival. And we actually just worked with them last year. And I think that's where we've gone. Actually, we need people like you 100%. So that's part of, that's our core team that we have now. We also have people that are kind of like, see, because it's Oktoberfest, obviously we have seasonal work as well. So we have, you know, customer services teams that come back and help us during that time, content creators as well. We always on the lookout for great content creators. So anyone that's listening now and think you are a great content creator, please get in touch. There's some of the people that are a part of our full-time team.
Excellent. So let's move to your fifth music choice now, Andrew. And how did we get to that?
This next music choice that I've got is actually a note to my other half as well. So she loves the H.G. Wells War of the Worlds book. She mm-hmm. thinks again, this is something that we've spoken about, is do what you love and everything else follows. So H.G. Wells pioneered science fiction. He wrote a book, 1898, for anyone that doesn't know. 1898, he wrote War of the Worlds. It was the first ever science fiction book, way ahead of its time. It's now had a lot of remakes. It's had even a soundtrack made after it by Jeff Wayne. And I think this is a little bit, we love listening to it. We love the book as well. And I think there's something about something that resonates with me of just do what you love and people catch on in their own time. And I think that was very much what H.G. Wells had done. And so, yeah, my next song, for the people that do know it, it's a bit of a cult classic, Eve of the War by Jeff Wayne.
Okay, let's listen to that right away. Eve of the War, Jeff Wayne. And that was Eve of the War by Jeff Wayne. So, Andrew, Oktoberfest, big thing now, and big team involved in it. And I'm wondering now, really, what kind of advice you'd give to entrepreneurs like yourself, who may be at an early age, at an early stage in their thinking, but a little bit nervous about what to do. What do you say to them?
Just go ahead and do it. I think it's find yourself in a position where you're not absolutely penniless. Find yourself in a position, and I'm not saying become rich as well. I'm saying, you know, make sure you're either living at home, or you don't have to worry about rent, or, you know, any outgoing costs. You don't have a lease on a car or anything like that. Tie yourself from any kind of liabilities like that. Whatever you want to do, just go deep in and just go for it. I think find people that are like-minded like you, that think the same as you. Don't try to fit that puzzle when you know it doesn't quite fit as well. You know, if you have a close friend or somebody that pops into your mind at this moment as you hear this, and you go, oh, that could be the person, you know, don't jump into that as well. Understand that, you know, it's like a child. It's like a mortgage at the end of the day. You got to have confidence in what you're doing, not because of the next 6 months, but for the next 5-10 years, potentially. Apart from that, I think just go in for it. I think there's so much support out there as well for people that want to start a business. So like the FSB, the Federation for Small Businesses, I think that's a great start. They are very affordable membership rates. They've got all sorts of advice that they can give you, and tools that are available within the membership. I'd recommend speaking with the Chamber of Commerce, so your local Chamber of Commerce as well. They've got a great business network as well. I've always said that just turn up, because there are always new people that go to things like that as well. So when I had the business, I used to host Chamber of Commerce lunches where I was, and the Federation of Small Business lunches as well. Just to kind of get them to see my business as well. And there was always relationships that kind of blossomed from that as well. And apart from that, I think, and maybe try something on the computer first as well. There's so much you can try and get done on the computer before you realize that you should probably go and get into a restaurant and start cooking up. You know, before we did all of that, you know, we sat there with spreadsheets and with friends, and, you know, we went to my best friend that I spoke about earlier. He owns a restaurant, a butcher's in Highbury. And so the butchers aren't open on a Sunday. So every Sunday we would go up there and we would just do some R&D, and we would cook chicken burgers continuously. And we did that for probably about 8 weeks, making about 20 chicken burgers a day. So, you know, you do the maths. We're doing 160 chicken burgers over an 8 week period, all with, you know, new recipes, new ingredients, new ways of doing things. We'd always go out to eat, but like we was on a budget as well, so we're not trying to eat in terms of like, oh yeah, like what great research and development. We were sharing burgers, sharing dips, sharing fries, you know, just trying to get out there of like, what is that, you know, what, how are people doing this, how are people starting businesses, how are people starting restaurants. I've got no culinary background whatsoever, neither did he, but we managed to open a restaurant that, you know, we were in articles with the BBC, the Guardian come down and covered us, we had Welland Hatfield Times. You know, we were selling out back week after week, and we looked at each other and we said, this is all off a fluke, basically, where we just sat together on a Sunday and we just kept putting ingredients together. And it wasn't until we got to about that 8th or 9th week and we tried it and we went, actually, that doesn't taste terrible. We've got something here. And then, you know, from then on, we just kept going. We were relentless with it. By then I'd quit my job as well in London because I was on furlough, and I thought, you know, this is my take on it. And if I didn't have the push, if I didn't have the trust with my friends, if I didn't have the resilience of going out there and trying new things and understanding how the best do it. My other best friend also said, you don't have to be the first, you've just got to be the best. So if someone out there has got an idea that you had, don't be disheartened from it. You've just got to be better than them.
I think that's wonderful advice. And there's a whole load of ingredients I'm hearing you talk about there, Andrew, including not just actually having a go, but also surrounding yourself with people that are like-minded and that you can trust and you can work with. Maybe not worrying about failing first time. And I think as well, having stamina and keeping going and also putting effort in, because I think probably one of the threads that's running through all of the different enterprises that you've been involved in is putting effort in. It wasn't easy. It wasn't a matter of sitting on a couch and watching an idea turn into loads of money. You actually had to go out and do stuff on a Sunday for several hours, probably in not the most comfortable conditions, and when you could have been doing other stuff. And that's probably I would say I'm hearing from what you're saying as being one of the key ingredients there.
100%. I think 99% of businesses fail in the UK. 8 weeks doesn't sound a lot for research and development, but when we look back at COVID being about a 2-year stint, we had 24 months. We had 2 months of that where we had to research the brand. We then had to launch the business. We then had to find a location. So it was all happening very, very quickly. I couldn't have done any of that without any of the things we just mentioned there.
Yeah. And would you say there's anything that you would have done differently? It sounds as though it was a pretty kind of steep uphill climb, but always in the same direction. Is there any advice you'd give now to your younger self?
I'd say to do it all again. Do everything I've just done, I'd say do it all again. Because there's those smaller details where, because I said, I could have made that better. But then I think that wouldn't put me in a position where I am now. I think it was a good thing to close the restaurant. I think it was a good thing to go ahead with the Oktoberfest stuff. I think it's a good thing that from what we've learned there, we're talking about, you know, we've got things in the pipeline of new ideas, new projects. And I don't think any of that could have been done with. They're not mistakes. They're all just lessons at the end of the day. And feathers in the hat or stripes on a shirt, whatever you want to call it, just keep collecting them, because before you know it, you'll become bulletproof, and you'll still, as long as you take the role of the student, I think you will flourish.
Lovely. So, Andrew, how do we get to your last piece of music now?
I think that my mum would be absolutely gobsmacked if I didn't mention her in any of this as well. I think she's always been an inspiration. She's always, musically, definitely as well. I think I have all these early memories of my mum blasting out Garage while she did all the house cleaning. So I've definitely subconsciously had a great music taste that's come from my mum as well. She's always been a big supporter of mine. Probably she's definitely been my biggest supporter of all of it as well. She's always, it's your mum at the end of the day. And I've always said to her, like, I don't want your help. I don't want you to go get in the nitty gritty and helping out at Oktoberfest. But she still turns up with loads of jacket potatoes, chili con carne, beans and cheese, and turns up on site and does lunch for everybody and dinner for everyone as well. It makes sure everybody's warm and well fed. So whatever way she tries to help, 100%. So I can't leave without dedicating a song to her, which would be Kings of Leon, Closer.
Fantastic. Well, before we listen to that piece of music and we'll play out with it for your mum, I wonder if there's anywhere in Hertfordshire that does mean something special to you now that you're reaching out beyond the boundaries with the business. Are there places in Hertfordshire that will always be special to you?
Yeah, so Cotton Mill is actually a place of my heart. That was when we first mentioned where I first stayed. It was when I was 6 months old. And when I come back after university, it's a place that I know like the back of my hands. It feels genuinely like home for me. My granddad lives on Butterfield Lane, looking out into the lovely fields just by Stockwell House. It was always a place for me at home. Shout out to the King Offer. You know, that was, I remember my childhood being around there as well. I remember when my granddad said, where are they going to hold all the wakes? So, you know, there was a very much a local culty thing around Cotton Mill. And whenever I tell people that, you know, I was from there, or, you know, I've lived there and stuff, people that are from there, they almost treat you a little bit nicer. I think you've seen it. So that holds a close place to my heart. That was where my mum was brought up. That was my first ever home. It's where my granddad is to this day.
Fantastic. Well, let's play your mum's choice of music, Kings of Leon, closer. We'll play that out now. Andrew Dempsey, thanks so much for sharing your Hertfordshire story with us.
Amazing. Thanks for your time, Ian.